part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am Christian Horn, and I am here with Kazu Kibuishi, of the creator of Amulet, I would say, most notably, right?
At this point. Yeah.
And for me, Daisy Cutter, which is like one of my favorite books of all time that you've been neglecting for forever. I love
that
book.
No, not neglecting. No. It's always on my mind.
Yeah. But... Well, no, I mean, that's one of the books that I loved, and that's kind of how we got to know each other, because I wrote a review for...
I know. Yeah, it was great. Thank you so much for that review. It really bolstered my confidence at a time when I really needed it, too.
Really?
Yeah, because when I started, you know, there's real uncertainty, you know, with the idea of doing graphic novels for a living was just not a... There were no real graphic novels at the time. I mean, people might say, "Oh, well, there was Watchmen and Mouse and Bone." Yes, they were successful and they were great graphic novels, but they were originally serialized comics. So there weren't really that many instances of a book that was made in a graphic novel format, aside from something like A Contract with God. You know,
by
Will Eisner, I think, is one of the few instances where that actually was the case. So I knew there was going to be a lot of uncertainty. Daisy Cutter was my first try at it in the conventional way by serializing it and forming it into a graphic novel. And after doing that, I thought, oh, this is how I'm going to make any other book I do, including Amulet. And then I went into drawing Amulet, and I tried to draw it as like one issue, and I couldn't do it.
Okay,
I fell apart. I really did. I just really couldn't. I couldn't move forward. And so I had to think back on how I did Daisy Cutter, because I was wondering, okay, that came out pretty well, and I did it pretty quickly. I did it on time.
Yeah,
I felt like a professional, and on Amulet 1, I felt like I was just way out of my element, and I was trying to figure out what was happening, and I realized that my brain could not process the entire graphic novel all at once, so I went back and I looked at the way I did Daisy Cutter, and I basically self-serialized Amulet the way I did Daisy Cutter. I just basically serialized it for myself.
So what does that really mean? Like, do you broke it up into chapters, or when you say self-serialized, because serialized to me means like almost like monthly comics, right? It's like little chapters and breaking it down. But is that what you mean?
Yeah, I do. I actually break it up into about 14 chunks now, each of the books. And I work on each chunk individually. I don't think about the rest of the book when I work on each of the scenes or the sequences.
Uh-huh.
Each of those sequences are about the length of a single issue monthly comic.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So for Amulet, with the first volume, you were thinking in terms of like the whole book, as opposed with like Daisy Cutter, you had sort of broken it down into chapters, and then you decided like, I'm going to go back to that method for Amulet.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And when you say like the graphic novel, my assumption is that you mean a story that's definitely it's not being released in like issues first. It's a graphic novel, like that's it, and it's coming out in a book form.
Right.
Gotcha.
I think a lot of the creative process is dictated by the way something is produced. You know, like your psychology changes as you make it.
Yeah.
And so for me with graphic novels, the secret to getting a graphic novel done was to sort of trick myself into thinking I wasn't making a graphic novel, but rather a bunch of small comics.
Oh, wow.
And if I didn't do that, I wouldn't be able to make the book. So I always tell people one of the things, the only things that, one of the things that actually allows me to keep moving forward is understanding my own bad habits.
Yeah.
So around them. If, you know, I get too into detail work or noodling, I know that. So I have to, I keep it in my mind. And so I make it so that my original pages, when I pencil them, are tiny. On Amulet 1 through 4, the pages were the size of a business card.
Really?
Yeah. Like, each of the pages, the penciled pages, were the size of, like, it were four. There were 4 to 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. So it's just a little bit bigger than a business
card. How? Wait, okay, hold on. Now you're freaking me out. So you're saying, like, the, are we talking about the outlines, final, the breakdowns, or?
The final pencils.
How? How did you do that?
I that's just a bad habit I have. I detail things. I can get into detailing really, really intensely. And so I knew that about myself. So yeah. I forced myself to not have the space to do it. So now, over the years, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, I'm a little more disciplined. So now I draw 2 pages per sheet of paper.
Okay.
So my final penciled page size is about the size of a DVD case.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what do you use? What kind of pencil are you using? Are you using
regular,
like a
pencil?
Really?
Yeah, regular, like a, I just use a blue Staedtler, like a blue pencil. Well, here's what I do after I'm done with the penciled page. I scan it into the computer and I blow it up to 9 by 12.
Oh, okay.
And that's what I ink.
Yeah.
So my pencils look really rough. Since
okay.
I'm also the inker of my own work, I don't need all the details.
Yeah.
So I don't want to waste time. So when I'm inking, I'm doing the detail work.
Okay. So, and when you say inking, because we had this discussion
on
the last podcast, and I saw a post on Facebook, like, you are not inking with inks, you're inking with traditional, like, pencil, correct?
Yeah, I'm just using a 2B pencil, yeah.
Wow. And then you scan that back in, and then you go into coloring on Photoshop, is that correct?
Yep. I just get rid of the blue line that I printed out. I print out the small page that I penciled.
Yeah.
And I print it out onto, you know, the, here, you know what, I'll show you.
So, we're,
I mean,
on
I,
video.
I know he's your show- audience won't be able to see it, but here, just so you get an idea.
He's on video, so he's going to show me, so you guys won't be able to see it. So, but he's going to show me the page, which I'm sure will just make my mind blow up.
All right. So thumbnails are that size, so they're really small, right?
Oh, wow. So for anyone listening, he's got, yeah, it's like a page of paper, and there's like, how many pages are on that? Like 2?
On this one? There are 8 pages here.
And is that so, 11 by 7?
Actually, these are really big for me, for thumbnails.
Really?
And this is an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper.
Yeah. So you've got, that looks like...
I usually do
12
more
pages?
Than this.
Wow.
I'll actually do about 12 pages or so on one sheet of paper.
Okay.
And it's generally illegible.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Only illegible to me.
Gotcha.
These are my final penciled pages.
Oh, wow. I wish I could take
8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. There's two to a sheet of paper.
That's amazing.
And then I print it out I print it out like this.
Oh, okay. So this is more like a traditional size comic page, right?
Yeah, this is 9 by 12.
Yeah.
Printed out on Bristol.
Okay.
Really faint. So I've already made adjustments in Photoshop to the drawings and stuff. Because
uh-huh.
a lot of the drawings are going to be wonky.
Okay.
I know that going in. So I just fix it in Photoshop by I just liquify. There's a liquify tool where you can move lines around, and I'll
yeah.
just around to fix it.
Yeah.
And then I print it out like this with the font and you know, with the dialogue and everything.
So you hand letter?
No, I actually don't.
Oh, really?
I hand lettered the first book, and a font was made based on the handwriting in the first book.
Oh, I see, because the printout has lettering on it, so you put that in, and then you go in and do your inks over that with the lettering in there.
Yep, yep. And I'm constantly rewriting and changing things as I'm going through this.
Oh, really?
And after that...
Oh, look at that.
So normally it's not printed on the bed. This is because I printed one page and something was wrong with it, so
yeah.
I fixed it and then printed it out again. I save paper by just printing right on the back of these things.
Yeah. Oh, so and, just for anyone listening, he's got the front of the page is like the large, or one side of the page is the large blue line printout with lettering in there. And then he flipped it over and there's like a full detailed like ink sort of drawing on the other side, which is kind of what I tend to do when I mess around with my cartooning. I don't like wasting paper either.
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, it's all about the final product, not about the process.
Yeah.
So the messier, it's not necessarily better, but, you know, it's fine with me if it's all messy.
So, yeah, that's really interesting to me because one of the things sort of, you know, throughout the years with me has been sort of like, realizing the fact that like or pencils or breakdowns or whatever before you get to inks or your final, like that can just be loosey goosey. Like you don't have to make it like super tight like you would see like in like How to Make Comics the Marvel Way, or you know, the Marvel tryout book. I remember seeing that and seeing like John Romita's like pencils and just being like, wow, that's how they do it. Like they're completely clean, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and you know, I always liked seeing the pencils better than seeing the inks.
Yeah.
So it was, I remember looking at a lot of superhero comics being produced. I mean, I love the inks on their own, and they have their own, it has its own appeal and art to it. But I always thought, gosh, you know, the audience doesn't see any of this.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't really realize all this extra energy and work is going into this. This is beautiful stuff. So no wonder a lot of artists and inkers get a little grumpy when, you know, people, you know, when they criticize artwork without knowing how much work goes into it, because there's so much work that goes into it. So I wanted to, not to avoid having to do more work than I needed to, or else I would probably not be able to scrap my pages, which I do so often.
Really?
Yeah, all the time. I try to throw out as much as I can, as often as I can.
So what do you say to like, say the artist? Cause you know, I go to a lot of conventions and stuff. One of the ways that people make income is through selling their original art, right? Like, do you do any of that, or is that just something consider?
I don't physically toss it. Like I don't trash it.
Okay.
Yeah. I have tons of original art, but I don't sell it.
Oh, okay. Ever? Like at all?
No, I don't. Ever.
Is there a reason for that? Like, you don't think that would be a good stream of income for you? Like, it would be a lot of other artists, or
it would. I want to make sure that I'm making money on making the books.
Gotcha. Like
on the thing that I'm doing, the job that I'm doing. I want that to be it. If I wanted to sell original art, I would get into doing original art for galleries. That's a whole different. It's a whole different industry, you know.
Sure.
I try not to spread myself thin. And I do. I have a motto to do more of less.
Gotcha.
not to say that I want to do less stuff, like, or do less work. I want to do more work, but of a few focused things. And I want my focus not to be on making the original art pretty. I don't want it to be any of that stuff. I wanted to focus on making sure that the final product looks great, and that it has a purpose beyond just being a cool novelty. I hope that my books do more than that. I hope that they're used as educational tools. I hope that they're used as a way for people to just, you know, come together and speak about it. You know, I think the entertainment serves those purposes. And it's not like I think we oftentimes mix the whole art buying culture and all that stuff with the popular culture, with mass media.
Yeah.
And I don't think they, I think that there's certain parts where they intertwine, but, I think if you try to do everything all at once, you end up doing nothing well.
Gotcha. So can I ask you, let me ask you, go back a little bit. So you scan, when you get to the coloring phase, so you've printed it out and you've inked it in pencil. Now this is probably just like, artist nerd talk. So I don't know if people listening are going to, but you know, for me, it's like, if I scan in a pencil page, like with pencil, are you using dark pencils to get like darker lines, or
no, I mean the the blue line underneath is so faint.
Yeah.
Because when I draw the blue line, it's pretty dark.
Yeah.
I scan it in. I basically run it at 25% or so.
Yeah.
And clean it up and stuff, so it looks really faint when I go to ink with a pencil.
Yeah.
With a graphite pencil on top of it. The graphite looks like ink. I mean, I was initially going to be an inker professionally in out of high school.
Really?
The first job I was offered was background inking at Extreme Studios. It was they wanted to train me into doing that, so they were telling me what I could do. They said, "Oh, you got some good inking techniques." That was the one thing they took away. They didn't really look at my pencils and think that was gonna fly.
Yeah.
But they thought the inking was good. So one thing I did in college was ink a lot. Actually, it was just in case I needed to fall back on comics. I thought I would end up being background inker or something. And the funny thing is, in the end, I realized, oh gosh, I don't need the ink.
Yeah, I guess now you don't, right? Or do you think that inking is sort of something?
When I was working in college, it made sense because we were photocopying all the patients, you know. So you needed it to be 100% black. It had to be, you know, either red or black. That was what you needed to have it be. And I once the scanner showed up, and we had our little jelly bean IMAX in the office.
Yeah.
And we were scanning images in grayscale and seeing how well it printed, I was blown away, and I realized that it's everything's changing.
Yeah.
We're not going to do all that old stuff anymore. I mean, I'm glad I got a chance to do it for a little while, but
yeah.
So yeah, you got to be open to new processes.
But when you get to coloring, does that make laying your flats like kind of tedious, or because I discovered
you can ask our flatters.
Oh no, because I mean, like, I'm not like you. I'm not like a professional. I don't have book, but I that I like to draw and cartooning. My forte is like photo retouching and like a lot of Photoshop, like stuff that's used on other stuff. But when I do mess around with cartooning or work on a project, the thing that I find that kills me and that seems the least sort of artistic is, or that's not the proper word, is laying the flats, right?
Yeah,
and I found a plugin.
Yeah.
Called BP Pelt. I don't know, B Pelt or something
like
BD
that.
Yeah, Pelt. Yeah, have you ever used that?
No, I know about it. I remember people suggesting it to me.
Yeah, yeah.
My stuff, but I never close my lines.
Yeah, so exactly.
It doesn't work. Yeah, it's
The
only time that I do close my lines, you know, on a consistent basis is in copper.
Okay.
Because I was coloring those on a flat, and I wasn't even.
Oh my God.
There were no layers.
Yeah, yeah.
I was teaching myself how to color, and I wanted to limit what I could use. So I said to myself, on copper, I can't use gradients.
Yeah.
I can't use soft brushes.
Yeah.
I can only use one brush, and it was just this one hard brush. And I can only use one layer. I had to work on the layer with the line. And I figured if I did all that, it would look like an old school comic in a way, like my mental process putting it together would be such that I was always considering the canvas.
Sure.
And that's actually something I applied to the Harry Potter covers. When I painted those were all single layer images.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And it wasn't for the sake of showing off or, you know, challenging myself. It was really to create the mental process of considering the canvas.
Yeah,
it's a lot, when you have layers and effects and stuff, you know that they're there, so you start you use them, and it starts looking like a digital image because you could see that the artist was considering the digital process.
Oh, that's interesting. So for the Harry Potter stuff, you didn't fall back on layers, or
no? I only did layers once, like the image was pretty much set. Like when the image looked like it was, you know, everyone's going to approve of it and it looks pretty good. Then I started cutting stuff out and putting them on layers so that I could adjust them for the purpose of the layout.
Yeah.
Or if like certain items needed to get changed, I would be able to do that. I don't know. I actually find it really freeing to work on very few layers. So I don't have to keep going. Like when I'm painting, I want to think, oh, I want to add this here and I want to make this here, instead of going, okay, I want to add this here. Which layer was it on? Oh, it's on.
Uh-huh.
57. Okay, is it on 57? So then the moment of inspiration is already kind of burned away by the time we get there.
Yeah.
So the mental process for that would it's like cataloging.
Yeah.
and you can't create while cataloging. I mean, you slow yourself down so much. So, and in fact, the one layer thing is something I learned from my friends, Chris Appelhans and Kang Lee. They were really great concept artists, and I saw them working very freely just on a single layer most of the time, you know, and then I see them add layers later on just to add effects and stuff.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, because usually sort of the fallback with all these programs, you know, like Manga Studio or like Photoshop is that you can have those layers and, and you know, all those effects and stuff. And for you to sort of like be like, I'm kind of stepping away from that. I'm, you know, that's pretty impressive.
I guess so. I mean, we're basically doing that out of necessity, in terms of the time, you know. Okay. And I think I was like one of the first people to do all this crazy Photoshop stuff in comics.
Yeah, like, maybe
we're doing it. And so it's not, you know, I don't think you should do it for the sake of doing it. I think you should incorporate it into the tools that we already have to make certain things better.
Yeah.
But they're just, I mean, it's so much better to draw on paper.
Yeah.
I mean, I have every kind of Cintiq you can, you know, you know, we have all these Cintiqs. We got Cintiqs all over the place and we have tablets everywhere. I'm trying out new stuff all the time. And, you know, it's so much better on paper. It's just paper is faster.
Yeah.
It's just more efficient, you know, on paper and then adjust in digital. It's just, it's so much better to adjust digitally than to go to a light table or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Coloring, of course, coloring is just so much faster.
So you mean the paper is really good for the moments of like inspiration or just like, and then adjusting is what those programs might generally be used for?
Well, let's go back to what I was saying about bad habits. Yeah. The reason why digital hurts on the drawing part of it is that you have the ability to undo your actions. And when you have the ability to be non-committal, you will stop yourself often, like all the time.
Uh-huh.
You know? So your doubt has an open window.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? Like, it's ready to jump in there and stop you from doing the next thing. But when you're on paper, you are committed a little longer. You know, you throw a line down and that's the one you're going to have to work with. And so you do. So you continue to try to draw around whatever you did. And you'll probably have more control because you just have more control over a pencil on paper than you do over a tablet pen over your Cintiq.
Uh-huh.
You know? And so you're more likely to be okay with a line you put down.
Wow.
If you have the Control Z option to undo Photoshop, you will often take it. And I do too. So I notice I'm slowing myself down a lot. Everyone keeps saying, oh, but you saved your time, all that time scanning and stuff. And I tell them, listen, that takes like no time at all compared to all of the doubt that I end up accumulating while having the option to undo every action I have.
That to me is like amazingly interesting because I have a good friend. He's been on the podcast a couple of times. Uh-huh. His name is Liad Goldberg. He's a really good artist, and he, for a while, was like, he didn't want to do anything like on paper, or he just saw it like as a big weakness. Like, he loved working in digital and he's really good at it. And my frustration with working solely in digital, like say something like Manga Studio, is I have a heavy hand, you know what I'm saying? And I tend to, the big joke in high school, you know, I was like the kid that would always sit and doodle comics, is that I was drawing for the blind. Like, you could flip the page over and, you know, it was like Braille. It was like, you know, so when I push on the computer, sometimes I'm getting that jitter and stuff, and that's what would drive me crazy. But I always I still love just doing stuff on paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's sitting in front of a screen, especially because what my actual job is, you know, in front of a screen all the time, you know, retouching stuff and, you know, working on video and stuff. It's such a good break from being in front of the computer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know. And I often think of it this way. When I'm drawing on paper, I'm pulling. Uh-huh. When I'm drawing on the computer, I'm pushing.
Okay.
And I feel like the drawing, like I can lead the drawing instead of have the drawing lead me.
Oh, wow. That's a really good way to look at it. Yeah.
I feel when I'm on the computer, I feel like I'm just like, like pushing, like sculpting the drawing.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I'm on the paper, I feel like, oh, hey, that's the, you know, I'm just writing the line.
Yeah, yeah. You
know? And it feels cathartic.
Yeah.
And you feel a release.
Yeah.
Whereas when I'm on the computer, I feel like I have no release. I'm now like I'm getting more stressed.
That's really interesting because I thought I was the only one who felt that. And coming from you,
people really, I don't think they really admit it or understand that that's happening.
Huh. Yeah, but I thought it was because I was more like, quote unquote, not necessarily an amateur, but, you know, I just didn't do it all the time. And mm-hmm. you speaking as someone who makes your living off of, you know, these great books, that to me is like, I mean, it's a little, this is why I love talking to you, like on our last interview, you know, because it's just like you bring, you know, having these conversations with you, it's just like, wow, I never would have thought that somebody who was doing this all the time, made his living off these books, you know, and, you know, goes to school, you know, does talks, presentations on, you know, digital art and stuff like that, would see it that way.
Right, right. Well, I think people do the digital drawing because they're afraid that they're losing time drawing and scanning and doing things like that. You know, they want to like cut out the middleman and stuff like that. And you know, it's generally a fear of losing time.
Yeah.
That loses the most time.
Yeah, that's, you're probably right. You're absolutely,
you know,
right.
Everyone's trying to find ways to save time instead of just do it. Just go and
get it done.
And I'm guilty of that too. So, this is one of the things I just accepted. I was like, you know what? There's certain processes, as old fashioned as they may seem, they're just faster and better. So you just gotta have to just write it out. I mean, I'm never the skeptic. I'm always the first person to be willing to accept new processes. So,
that's interesting.
I'll let you know. Just, you know, I'll go into the lab. I'll see if it works. You know, in fact, I did draw from scratch the first four pages or two to four pages of Amulet. The first four pages of Amulet 7.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just did it. And, you know, not only did the process take too long,
mm-hmm.
but I don't even like the way it looked.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, I just don't think it looks as good. And you know what it was? And here's the thing. It doesn't look as good because the scaling looks off.
Okay.
Because sometimes, unless I force myself to not change the size of whatever brush I'm using as a pencil or an anchor, as an inking brush.
Yeah.
If I force myself to keep the same size all the time, then I'm considering scale. But if I'm zooming in on the picture and I'm changing the size of the brush, I am adjusting the scale of the image all the time. So I'm not considering scale from the perspective of the reader.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
Sometimes I'm going to fly on the paper, and that's going to change the way the detail work is on a particular part of the page.
Yeah.
Or I'm looking at it from way too far away.
Yeah.
Oh. So it just looks a little, I don't know, something about it seems a little out of whack.
Sure. So that was on Photoshop, correct?
You can have the mental discipline to replicate what you can do on paper.
Yeah.
Not saying you can't do it, and I think whoever does do it on digital, they should just continue if they like it.
Yeah.
But for me, I just felt that it was too much extra stuff to think about.
Gotcha. Have you ever, I'm assuming that's in Photoshop, right? Like, have you ever tried Illustrator for like inking or that sort of thing?
No, I don't think I would use Illustrator for inking. You mean to like vectorize the lines?
Or just to draw in them. I came across a couple of videos, and for somebody like me, who's practically an engraver sometimes, right. To get those smooth cartoon lines, I thought it was, for me anyway, I was like, oh, this looks interesting. I don't know if it's perfect, you know, but right. I was messing around with it.
Yeah, you know, I haven't thought to check it out. I'll check out Illustrator again.
I'll send you a video that is very basic, but for me, you know, I was just like, for me, I was like, oh, this is fun. And I was messing around with it for a while, and then I got away from it.
Yeah, if it's fun, then that's the key. Yeah. You know? I mean, if you enjoy doing it, I think that's the process you should choose. Sure. I mean, that's effectively what's happening for me. It's not, I enjoy drawing on paper. It's fun.
There's me too.
Maybe it's just my habits, you know, that allow me to feel that way about it. But, and I feel like I'm always working if I'm drawing on a screen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll send you something that I did in Illustrator and you can be the judge. Yeah. It's not finished, but so let's talk about Amulet, because this is what's coming out. This is like the big sixth book. How long has it been since the last book? Because my daughter, this is book six, right?
It's been about 2 years, isn't it?
Yeah,
it
something like that.
Well, no, it was a year and a half.
Yeah.
So
my daughter's waiting. We're all waiting. It comes out when? End of February or?
Yeah, I think February 23rd.
That's great. Yeah. We have all the books and my daughter loves them. And I told when we were on the phone yesterday, I was like, do you know who that was? And she's like, I don't know. Who was that? And then she goes, I was like, that's the guy who created Amulet. And she's like, what? You know him? So you've got a big fan, you know. She was like, can you introduce me? And I was like, well, he doesn't live in LA, you know. So you've got a big fan. But I thought that this was going to be the final book. Like, didn't you say a while ago?
I did think it was going to be the final book a while ago, too. You know, as far as my contract went, that was the case. You know, I had a contract. I had, you know, it was my decision, you know, to make it seven books a while ago. I said, you know, seven books. And this is because I was at book, I was finishing book five. I was working on five, I think four or five when we had to sign the contract for six and seven.
Yeah.
And around that time, I just thought, oh, yeah, I think I could finish it in seven. But by the time I was working or in the middle of six,
seven is coming out, not six. I misspoke
earlier. Oh, yeah, seven. In the middle of working on six, I realized that there's just too much to wrap up.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't prepared to wrap it up in just another book. So, because I had all the notes for it and I just couldn't fit it into one book. And so you'll see when you read number seven, it will feel like the first act of a book, of a big book.
Oh, really?
Rather than it's different than a lot of the other ones. It's the one. I mean, the closest comparison would be number one. Number one feels like it's not the end because it isn't. It's the first part of at least two. Right? I had to do two. So by the end of the first book, you're kind of at the halfway point of a story. And so with Amulet 7, it's definitely the first part of a very big journey.
Okay.
That ends on number 9.
Gotcha. Oh, so is it going to go till number 9? Are we going further than that? Or
No.
No, you're like,
it ends at 9 for sure.
Oh, okay.
I'm working on it right now, number 9.
Okay.
And I'm actually doing a lot of development work for that book right now.
Uh-huh.
Because I saw myself working on number 8 and feeling a little bit lost.
Uh-huh.
So I went all the way to the end of 9.
Oh, wow.
And I'm working my way back a little bit just to figure out what it is I need to set up in 8 to prepare for 9. It's pretty challenging. It's kind of the most challenging thing I think I've had to do. Well, every new book is challenging in some way, which is great. But this is a whole new challenge.
So
basically three at once.
When you were midway through six, you sort of had like a moment of inspiration, or you were sort of like, wait, there needs to be more. Or you were just like, I can't. It seems like it was a bit of both. Like, I can't just wrap this up. And now now it's going to lead into much more stuff.
I mean, I had to do a little bit of soul searching at that time. I was actually at the Schultz Museum. I was like staying at the Schultz guest house, you know, spending time with Jeannie Schultz and the whole you know, the Creative Associates gang.
Wow.
And it was great. You know, I do that like every 2 years or so.
Yeah.
And while I was there, I really started thinking, gosh, you know, maybe Amulet is my thing. Maybe it's my peanuts. Is it? Is it my peanuts?
I mean,
is it the thing I'll do for a long time? I mean, it became something so much bigger than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
I anticipated only doing one book to begin.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just one book, and Scholastic asked me to split it in half. So then it became a two-book contract, and by the end of the second book, it was clear that the adventure was really just beginning.
Yeah.
Even though I had intended in some ways to end it at two.
Yeah.
It just felt like, okay, well, look, there's all sorts of stuff that could happen. And so everything that happens after two is kind of new.
Yeah.
Except that I had this idea in mind of how I would end the whole series.
Yeah.
It hasn't changed.
Yeah.
It's still the same.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, so it's kind of just kind of ballooned into this big thing, and it happened organically. And then so I was thinking, is it that one comic strip?
Uh-huh. You know? And is there
one piece
in your mind, is that okay? I mean, because it seems like,
and I realized it's not what I intended to do.
Yeah.
So whatever the ramifications are of me not going and continuing for eternity, I felt like I've already made that choice a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I should live with it. And you know, because a lot of the reason why I do these books is to fulfill dreams that I started when I was younger.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I have to kind of take the business out of my mind. I have to take the audience out of my mind, my publisher, everybody, you know, and really sit down and think, like, what was it that I had originally intended to do?
Yeah.
By doing that.
Yeah.
So I decided to kind of go back to that. And I looked at Bone and by Jeff Smith, and I looked at Nausicaa by Hayao Miyazaki, and I knew that that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to make something that stood on the shelf right next to those two.
Yeah.
On my shelf, each of those books comprise of, in the case of Bone, is 9 volumes. In the case of Nausicaa, they printed it in, you know, they have a 7-volume set, right?
Yeah. Well, I just picked up the giant, like, 2 hardcover set, and I'm in the middle of reading it now.
Okay,
it's amazing.
It's awesome, yeah.
I never read it, yeah.
I wanted Amulet to just be able to sit next to those two without looking out of place.
Yeah.
And that meant that I couldn't really go beyond about 9 books, because that's as far as Jeff went, you know?
Okay.
I mean, even my books are, I think, 220, on average, 208 pages.
Uh-huh.
And Bone, I think, is like 128. Yeah. So, which is what Scholastic asked me to deliver early on. So it's already, like, unwieldy. It's, like, so big, you know?
Yeah. That seems like a pretty big challenge. Was, like, Jeff Smith's Bone, like, the thing where you were like, I want to do that. Like, that's what I want to do. Like, was that the template?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I'm following. I'm the second guy, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just following, you know, his path in a lot of ways. I mean, he opened the door for us, I feel like I'm just keeping it open. And I'll do it again after I'm done with Amulet. I have another series, so it's not like I'm gonna stop. But I wanted to make sure that I could do multiple storylines in my lifetime. And so that means if I did another 9 book series after Amulet, I would probably only have the chance to in with full health
do
two more series.
And oh, wow. You know, you're pretty, like, ambitious.
For the 20 years. And then I guess I could probably do another couple. So maybe 3 series.
Yeah. How do you maintain the discipline of, like, because I know part of artists everywhere is, like, you're working on something or you're working on a series and another idea pops in your head and you're sort of like, oh, my God, this is, like, great. And there's always a temptation to, like, put the thing you're working on aside and be like, I want to work on this. Do you make room for other ideas just for later on? Or are you just like, I got to focus on Amulet? Like, that's
it. No, Amulet has been flexible enough that I could incorporate a lot of the new ideas I have.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, that's what I'm doing. I'm creating for the next series. It's not like I'm going to have everything set in stone when I start.
Sure.
What I will have established are a set of rules for myself, like things where certain characters are going to be in it or maybe not. I mean, there's going to be a framework for us to just, I'm going to look at it like a vehicle for me to do a lot of the things that I anticipate wanting to do throughout those years.
Okay.
And so there's a little flexibility there. A lot of flexibility. I mean, I could almost do anything in Amulet, which is why I was really considering, well, maybe I could just keep doing this forever, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll probably sell a bunch of books and things like that, and that'd be great. But
Yeah.
yeah, at the same time, I also didn't want to make it hard on librarians and booksellers. That was another consideration. I didn't want them to have to pick and choose amongst 20-something volumes of my book to put on their shelf. I wanted them to know that there are these nine, that's the set. Like if you're gonna put Harry Potter on the shelf, you want to put all of them on there, and it's not impossible because there's only seven books, you know.
So do you think that's like a hardship to like collectors or booksellers? Because I know like one of my
If
favorite
there's a
series.
hundred volumes of a particular series, you are making it tough on that seller,
Oh,
I think.
really?
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of booksellers about this too. I mean, I imagine so. I used to work in retail, and I helped to put together a retail store in Alhambra. And it's hard to it's shelf space is hard to come by. You know, you got to choose what you're going to put up on the shelf. So, you know, the best things that you could possibly have are books like The Phantom Tollbooth or Lord of the Rings or something where it's contained. You know, it's something that is complete, and you know how to explain it to somebody, and you can sell multiple copies of that thing, you know. And instead of having to sell like a whole bunch of different volumes of a particular thing to one person, you know, which is kind of the way that I feel like the direct market comics industry has always been going towards. They often try to mitigate risk by trying to sell to the very same people over and over and over and over again, as opposed to finding new readers that the older readers are going to be able to have a shared experience with. And so I'm cognizant of that, and I'm trying to avoid, you know, doing the whole direct market thing with my books. It's
No, I mean
like
that's
manga like that too, right?
manga. Well, that's what I was going to mention. I mean, some of my favorite, and I know I'm blanking out of the artist. I can't read keep up with something like say like Naruto, which is
Yeah,
like
and
I just
you love it, right?
yeah, I love it.
I love One Piece. I think they're both awesome. And I just can't. I'm a comics fan. I make comics. I have no room on my shelf for
Yeah,
that.
no, it goes in the garage, if that, or on eBay. But there are certain series like Monster or 21st Century Boy, 20th Century Boys, which to me are like
You can get
the
those.
yeah, you can get, but they are when you're explaining them to somebody else who's like, oh, I really am looking for something new to read. And I'm like, this is great, but you're in for 20 issues, 20 books, you know what I mean? And
But for Monster, I think it's still not unwieldy. Is it 9 books or 8 books?
no, Monster's like 18.
18?
Yeah, and I have all of them. I mean, I bought all of them. I was lucky enough to pick up that series when it was ending its first print run, so I was able to just blow through, you know, pick them up.
I still
But
think that's still kind of manageable, though. I mean, I'm just thinking about the 70 volume ones. I mean, I just feel like no one's going to go, like, no casual reader is going to buy 70 volumes of anything. That's like bigger than, you know, an encyclopedia set. So they're not going to do that. But I mean, maybe 20 volumes. It's a little unwieldy, but you know, I mean, I think Monster is contained, you know, at least. I mean, I didn't finish the whole thing. So, you know, I still think, I think Naoki Urasawa is probably the best comic artist living today.
Oh my God, I agree with you 100%. Other than you, who I have on the line right now. No, I mean, I agree with
Yeah,
you.
I do something different, but yeah, no, Urasawa, I think, from an artist to artist perspective, I think he's the king right now. I don't, I look at it like if we were all athletes or something, and you had to like admit like, hey, who's the one who's got it going right now? And I'd say Urasawa's got that.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I, not to diverge too much onto somebody else's work, but I consider Monster. It's really funny because you mentioned Watchmen and you mentioned, you know, a lot of Alan Moore's stuff I consider to be some of the pinnacle stuff out there. But, you know, Monster was I think, one of the greatest comic book reading experiences of my life, where
Yeah,
I read the whole thing and I loved every minute of it, and it kept me on the edge of my seat. And at the end of the series, I was just like, that was great. Like, this was great, you know? So there's not going to be any 20 volume Amulet, at least.
No. Well, if that ever happens, it will be me revisiting it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Do you
But right now, that's not what I have in plan. I have planned. I already have a contract for the next series, actually. So.
Oh, okay, really?
I've already been developing it for 10 years.
Can you speak anything about that, or is it in the same world, or is it?
No, we'll see. We'll see where I am in 2 years when I'm done with this.
Oh, wow.
The Amulet, and I'm actually physically starting on the next series. I'll be a whole different person, you know, by then.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think people can expect for volume 7? I mean, without getting into spoiler or anything like that, like, it's been 2 years. So, like, what
yeah,
have you...
it's going to get, it was the most challenging book to write.
Yeah. Really? Why?
Yeah, easily. Because it goes back. The first book was the most challenging before this one.
Uh-huh.
This book goes back to the most challenging elements of the first book.
Okay.
You know, dealing with death, and uh-huh. and that's really what started the whole series, right? Is Emily having to deal with her father's death?
Yeah.
We're gonna go right back into that. So it was difficult in that way because I got to. I'm essentially in number 6 and like books 2 and 3 and 4 and even like I kind of got to take a break a little bit,
uh-huh.
you know, from the seriousness of it all and just have an adventure. And so I could just worry about how I produce the books more mm-hmm. than how I was the production director side of me was, you know, was busy.
Yeah.
On stuff while the writer side of me was getting to not necessarily coast, but I didn't have to have the characters make such consequential decisions as I did in the very first book.
Okay.
The fifth book, it was a return to form in that way.
Yeah.
And now the seventh book is that in a big way. Yeah. So I'm curious to see what people say because I feel... Like part of me thinks that without the last two books, I think people might be even upset.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, maybe without seeing the end, because I don't leave people in a good place at the end of this one. So,
oh no.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they feel that way. There's hope, but you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they should know that this is the very. I'll just say this: at the very end of this book is the first book that says to be continued on it.
Oh.
Just to make sure. That people know that it's not the end.
So this is sort of your Peter Jackson, like Lord of the Rings movie at the end where it's like...
The last three books are sort of Amulet in Lord of the Rings mode.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, because I remember recommending the first Lord of the Rings to my father-in-law and uh-huh. he went to see it and then he came back and he's like, Christian, what? I have to, like, it isn't over yet? And I was like, no. I was like, you have to go see the next one. He's like, how long do I have to wait? So, you know, that's great. That's interesting. That's good to hear.
That. Yeah. And I often think of Seven Samurai, actually. And
oh,
it's like
yeah.
We're entering intermission.
Intermission. That's great. So, yeah, well, we can't wait in this house to get it, but are you allowed to talk any details about the movie? Because you
oh,
posted,
the movie? Yeah.
You posted on your Facebook page.
I don't know how much I can talk about it. There's not, I mean, it's been so far, we're still in the process of just getting all the contract stuff figured out and everything.
Gotcha.
It's been going so well, generally, you know, knock on wood here. I mean, fake wood here.
Yeah.
the process has been really positive so far.
Okay.
I have just the greatest time talking to producer Pete Harris over at Temple Hill, and you know, we're just about the same age. You know,
come
from very similar backgrounds too. And he was a bit. He actually knew about my work through Daisy Cutter.
So oh, wow.
Yeah, he was an agent, I think, a film agent at the time at ICM or something. Oh, was it at ICM? I forgot where he was. Or Mosaic? I forgot where he was working. But he saw Daisy come across his desk, and that's when he was introduced to the work. And so he revisited, you know, he remembered that, and he reached out to David Saylor, who was a friend of his, about Amulet, and asked him, like, what's going on with that? And this is how... the ball got rolling to get Amulet over to Fox.
Okay.
And he called like right around the time the option lapsed at Warner Brothers.
Okay. So, yeah. So this is a different option.
It's a whole
than,
different thing. Yeah. Completely different people, whole different thing. It's it's just a much better situation for us because we're working with people who read the books already.
Yeah.
When we were at Warner Brothers, the book wasn't done. The first one wasn't even done. Like we had just the galley copies. That's what that deal was based on, galley copies of Amulet 1.
Yeah.
And it had just been rolling over and over for years.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I see.
And it was optioned forever. Since 2007?
Oh, interesting.
2007 or 8, yeah.
Well, I remember you told me, and it was something we couldn't talk about a while ago, but mm-hmm. you said something like Will Smith was involved, right, or something?
Yeah, yeah. It started out with Akiva Goldsman, and he was searching for the right people to come together and put it together. And I don't know if it was just Will and Jada just sitting in the lobby or something of Akiva's office, because they work together, right, on I Am Legend.
Okay.
And so they saw it, and when Akiva's group was going to let the option lapse, the Smiths decided to pick it up for their kids. They said, this looks interesting, that I think we can have Will be a part of this too.
Yeah.
So they wanted to do something in the vein of Pursuit of Happiness or After Earth or, so I think After Earth is the movie they were looking for, because they were looking for something that was like a Swiss Family Robinson type of vehicle for Will and Jaden.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's cool, but I don't know if this is it, because the dad dies.
Yeah.
5 minutes. So,
yeah.
And then we have to change everything. And I even proposed a way that you could do it, and they liked it, but... I don't know. Eventually, they decided to move in a different direction, which I think worked for all parties.
Yeah, it makes me breathe a sigh of relief. I remember you telling me Will Smith, and I was like, okay, I'm going to be positive about this because I really like this guy. I'd be like, okay, yeah. I'm like nodding my head, you know, because obviously we've only met a couple of times, and I didn't, want to piss on anybody's parade, for lack of a better term. You know what I mean? Yeah, but Will Smith makes me a little nervous, but you're a positive guy. And I was like, if anybody can make this work, or at least that's the way you come across to me, I'm like, Kazu can make it work. So we'll see,
Yeah, and look at, people can go, oh, we can breathe a sigh of relief, which we did. When the option came back to us, we were trying to be quiet about it.
Sure.
The options came back to us, and we celebrated that day.
Okay.
But at the same time, without their assistance, I wouldn't have been able to hire Jason. We wouldn't have been able to do a lot of things on the books.
Yeah.
The option money was really critical for us, and it came at just the right time for our development.
Yeah.
And so I'm always just willing to see how things will work out. And so I'm always willing to give everybody a chance.
Yeah, sure.
If they're professional and they're great. I mean, I think there's always the opportunity for them to do something great.
Yeah.
You know, like Peter Jackson, I was a huge fan of his before Lord of the Rings, because I loved Dead Alive. I picked that up on a whim at a local video store, and I was blown away by how awesome this low budget, cheapy, high concept horror film was.
Yeah.
And I was always keeping track of his career. I worked at a movie theater when The Frighteners came out, and I saw it in the theater.
Oh yeah.
And I was the only one in there.
Oh really? Yeah.
I thought it was great. I was like, gosh, this guy's really good with fantasy. And
yeah, for me, it was Heavenly Creatures.
I thought the script needed work, but I thought that third act really fell apart. But aside from that, Frighteners is really cool.
Yeah. And I like The Frighteners too.
Yeah, and so when they announced him for Lord of the Rings, and I remember the people saying, who is this guy?
Yeah.
No, the wrong guy for the job, blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, you guys. He's got all the right tools right now, and he's like, it's a good time for him. It's like, this is the wave is cresting
on his
career. I think it'll work out.
I think all you had to look at
– Good, so.
Yeah, I think all you had to look at was Heavenly Creatures, and I was like, this guy's got it.
What Will Smith and Jaden and everybody was doing at that time.
Yeah.
With the Karate Kid, Karate Kid, Pursuit of Happiness are wonderful movies. I mean, they're just fantastic.
I have not seen them.
You haven't seen them?
No.
Oh, man. You should definitely see The Karate Kid.
The Pursuit of Happiness was the where the son was home. They were homeless, right? Or something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, that was a good one. That was good.
Definitely see The Karate Kid, because I think
really?
It's really good.
I'm so locked into the old one, though. I love it so much.
Oh, it's really good. Sean Levy directed it. He did a great job. He also directed Night at the Museum. And I had a feeling that he was probably going to end up directing, you know, the Amulet movie. And I thought, well, this guy totally gets family movies. We were watching Night at the Museum again. The kids just love it. It's like, that's a great
family. Oh, yeah. Night at the Museum is, we just watched
great family movie.
Yeah, you know? You're absolutely right.
Sean Levy does fantastic family movies. He did Real Steel also, which is really good.
Oh, yeah. The robot thing, right?
Yeah. So if you, you know, that group was looking at doing, you know, the Amulet movie.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
It had been surrounding it. And I thought the heart of what they did, you know, made it okay for me.
Yeah.
For the vision of this project to change, and maybe it wouldn't change us so much as, or change the project so much as it would change the way they do things, you know?
Yeah.
So you always got to be willing to give somebody a chance, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's a very optimistic view of Hollywood, but I appreciate
the people are changing all the time. They're always shifting and doing different new things. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
One of the most interesting career paths is McGee. I think.
What has he done late? What has he done?
What? Supernatural? Come on, man.
Oh, I don't watch Supernatural.
It's great.
Is it really?
Amy's all obsessed with Supernatural.
Oh, really?
I know all about that storyline, and I've been watching episodes. It's really good.
Oh, no, I haven't been watching it.
You know, he produced that series, and that's his big thing. And
I didn't know that.
Sandra Clare now. And
last I heard, he was walking away from the Superman movie, like ages, and then hadn't really heard anything. So you're saying Supernatural was like... That's what his focus has been on?
I think so, yeah, because he's the producer of that series.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. I think I tried to watch the first couple episodes and then it just got like lost.
If anybody's working in Hollywood and is getting something made and it's getting to the screen, that deserves a round of applause. I mean, seriously.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
People don't know the ins and outs of these things. And if something looks polished and is watchable.
yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
That's a heck of an achievement.
I don't disagree with you. I
could
think
never be a film critic. I have a degree in film criticism. And
oh,
I can't
you do?
Do it. I can't do it for a profession because I know how hard it is to make the movies.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I couldn't tell somebody that their movie is garbage because I know how hard it would be to make it. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, and that's the thing with the comic book reviews too.
Yes.
When I was or when I do for my site, I know how hard it is to make something.
Yeah.
So I try to be constructive instead of tearing something down.
The
things that get me upset, and I think a lot of kind of like film nerds upset, is when you seem to have all the resources at your disposal of like a studio and millions of dollars, and then you make something and it's just like horrible. You know what I mean? That's what gets me. And, or it seems like you weren't even really trying. And I think that that might've been, you know, the sort of fear that popped into my mind when, you know, you mentioned the individuals you mentioned for Amulet. I was okay, like, don't, you know. But again, you've got a good head on your shoulders. Who am I to criticize, you know?
I don't know. Will Smith always brings it, man. I think everything he does is interesting, at least, you know. I thought Hancock was good, too. I loved I Am Legend. I thought that was really good.
Oh, really? Yeah. I like the book, so.
I love the book, yeah.
Oh,
and I'm
really?
A huge Matheson fan, and I know what you're thinking about it and stuff.
Yeah.
It's two totally different things.
Yeah.
But seriously, the first 30 minutes of I Am Legend, that stuff I've seen in recent years.
The first, I'd say 10 minutes with Emma Thompson and the cure for cancer thing, like,
just,
that was fantastic.
Yeah, just all that stuff where he's just trying to learn to live. You know,
Robert
Neville is just, you know, sort of rooting around the city and everything. Some amazing stuff. Yeah, Francis Lawrence has always been on my radar, too, as a great director. So it's good to see him seeing success with the Hunger Games.
Oh, yeah, the Hunger Games. Yeah. We still haven't seen the last one. No time for
I haven't. Yeah, I haven't had time to see it.
You got to get a sitter, man. That's part of the problem. Well, this is great. So your Amulet 7 comes out February 23rd.
Yep.
At least that's what it kind of says on Amazon.
Yep.
And you're already getting ready for another series. So that's good.
I'm also producing the movie. So.
You are? What movie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't tell you. Yeah.
No, you didn't tell me.
As a producer, too, as executive producer. So really, I'm just there to be a cheerleader.
Yeah.
I'm already getting input. You know, in a little early, you know, getting to suggest people for them to meet. So.
Oh, wow. Oh, so producer on the Amulet movie.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. I thought you were saying like another movie. But,
No. I have no time. To...
I was like, wow, this guy
really don't have time to produce anything really. Besides the book. So.
Well, that's good that you're involved. So you're involved in the film and like you've got input and stuff.
So far, I mean, like I'm so, we're so early in the process, but it's really hard. So it's really hard for me to, you know, to be, I'm always cautiously optimistic,
of course.
So far the process with these guys has been so great. Just from the contract standpoint, and also, just the sense that, they really respect the authors.
Yeah.
That they help, whose films they help produce. You know, they did the Twilight movies, yeah, and did the Maze Runner, and the Fault in Our Stars. And, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. I think they're doing it right. So.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'm excited for you. Cause
for them, the audience of the reading audience comes first. Oh, and their kids read the books too. And I think that helps.
Well, yeah, I would imagine. Yeah. The thing is, I mean, Amulet has so much potential to, I mean, it could be like another Star Wars. I mean, it's something that has all that imagination in it. You know what I mean? And so for this sort of thing to be happening and you to be happy, you know, with the people that you're working with and, you know, positive about it, which you always have been, you know, I'm the negative Nelly, you know, but you always have been. And so for you to be happy and like involved like that, that gets me excited for you. So that's great.
Okay, cool. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. You know, I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm not going to get crazy excited about it, but.
Well, you know, let yourself get crazy.
It'll be cool. Yeah, it'll be cool. I just want to be able to take my grandma to the movie premiere. That's my whole goal right now. That's what I told them. I said, let's get this done quick, please. Because like, my grandma's still around and she can get to go to see the premiere, and that's a big deal for me. So that was part of the contract, was that I get to take my family.
that's
to
great.
The premiere. So that was because I think for her, it's like, to see her grandkids succeed is like a huge deal, because it took them a lot of effort to get us here where we are. So,
oh my God,
and my grandpa too, and he passed away. Unfortunately, he passed away.
I'm sorry.
He was in his 90s, so he did well. It's sure. You know, it was going to happen, and his memory was already going anyway. So
yeah.
I think it's important for her to see all this stuff. I mean, she got to go. I took her to New York for the big Harry Potter reveal and everything.
Oh really? Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And so she got to see all that. So she's getting to see a lot of cool stuff. And
oh, that's so great. So good for you. Like, you know, well, let me just say, I mean, I've kept you on for an hour or so, and I just appreciate your time. And, you know, the little bit of time we've hung out together, you know, you've always been really nice. You've always been like super generous, and you've always been really great with, you know, advice or whatever, and just like talking. So, and the interview, I mean, this is the 150th episode of Part-Time Fanboy, and we had you on for episode 100. So thank you for coming back. You know, I just really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you too. Well, thanks, because you know your reviews of Daisy Cutter really still stick with me. They're still on my site, I think.
Are they?
Yeah,
oh, that's great. Yeah, I don't know if Ain't It Cool, like Ain't It Cool's search function is horrible, so it's hard to find like old stuff. So I may just go and find that review and copy and paste it, sure I have it somewhere. But yeah, no, I mean, I think all your stuff is great. I mean, ever since I saw Daisy Cutter, and then, you know, we met, and then I picked up Amulet from my daughter, and she loved it. So I'm very appreciative of your work and your generosity too, because whenever I run into you at conventions, you're just so like sweet and nice, and even though you're super busy. So thank you.
Oh, no, it's great. Well, thanks, Christian.
Yeah, and if you ever get to meet Kazu in person, he's super nice. He's not like me. No, I'm just kidding. I'm nice.
No, you're a nice guy.
I'm nice. Just don't get me in a bad mood. No, I'm sorry. Well, anyway, this has been the 150th episode of Part-Time Fanboy. My name is Christian Horn, and I have been on the line with the very generous, very sweet, very kind creator of Amulet, Kazu Kibuishi. And I can't wait to see the movies. I can't wait to read the next book. So thank you so much for your time. It's always appreciated.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Christian.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening to Part-Time Fanboy, and hopefully we'll be back with a new episode soon.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
Part-time. Oh, yeah. Anthony Parkheim, parkheimfanboy.com.